This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
Exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This could have been avoided if we followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
What was it you were saying about my voice?
It's loud, it's strong, and it's good, and I appreciate your support.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
Now, here's Lars Larson.
Be sure and keep that volume up.
On FM News 101.
It's going to be one of the highest rated shows ever.
KXL.
Woohoo! Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome to Monday on the Radio Northwest Network. Hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving, and I'm glad to invite you to this program where we give you the chance to sound off. You're a naysayer. We put you right to the head of the line. If you call the producers and tell them that Lars is full of it, I can set him straight. You go right ahead and do that. You will be put to the front of the line. And there is so much to talk about today. We've got perverts on Capitol Hill, of course. You've got John Conyers and you've got Al Franken and the rest. And do you know that there are some liberal friends they have in the press corps who at least one of them is making the argument that that somehow poor people, blue collar women in particular, do not know what sexual harassment is? Because their lives are filled with sexual harassment. I'm going to play the soundbite for you a little bit later, but we'll get to that. There are other things, though, to talk about first. Seattle and its crazy income tax. I know, we've argued, we've told people from the very beginning this thing was illegal. And now a federal judge, Judge John Rule, what a great name for a judge, Judge Rule. He has said that this judge, this income tax that they've made, the proposal for a Seattle City income tax, which would only fall on the richest people. And you say, well, that's good, isn't it? Isn't that what a progressive city has to do? Yeah, except for the fact that those kinds of income taxes are illegal and unconstitutional under Washington State's constitution. I'll get into talking about that in just a moment as well. And we'll talk about whether or not Uber has been unintentionally helping out criminals. And now, well, I mean, if you did it unintentionally, what are you supposed to do about it? Uber's actually helping the cops to catch some of those criminals who've been making use of the ride-sharing system to go out and commit some of their crimes. We'll talk about that as well. In Eugene, the VA medical staff says that they are in fear for their careers, but they want something done to improve the performance of some of the VA medical clinics for the veterans to whom we owe so much in this country. We'll talk about that as well. And we'll get your phone calls and your emails. But our Twitter poll today, this has to do with something done by Governor Christine Gregoire, who never should have been governor of the state of Washington. She lost the election to Dino Rossi, but like the Democrats do, they kept counting the ballots over and over again until they got the number that they wanted, and Christine Gregoire became a two-term governor. Well, in the final days of her terms as governor, this was in 2013, just 4 years ago, Governor Christine Gregoire, as reported by the Seattle Times Fish Wrapper, commuted the life sentence of a man and decided that he didn't have to spend the rest of his life in prison, even though the law said that if you commit three strikes, three serious crimes, you go away to prison for the rest of your life. Well, she decided that he'd already served enough time. He hadn't even done 20 years because he was convicted of his third strike in 1995, and less than 20 years later, what did Christine Gregoire decide? Why, that he deserved to have his sentence commuted, and he was then let out of prison in January 2 years ago, January of 2015. He served 2 years on community supervision. That ended in January, and guess what? That man, Stoney Rivers, 50 years old, who was given a second chance by Democrat Christine Gregoire, he is now charged with murder in the shooting death of a 24-year-old man at a motel in Kent earlier this month. So you have to ask yourself this. Number one, should we have truth in sentencing? That is, when somebody is convicted of a crime and they are given a sentence by a jury or a judge, should they actually have to serve out their entire sentence? And number two, if you're going to allow governors to make exceptions from time to time, when they find something of extraordinary circumstances and they say in this special occurrence, we should allow this person to get out early, should those be so rare that they only happen every once in a while, and they are only in the best of circumstances because, as you know, I've been covering courts and cops and crime for the better part of 40 years. Everybody finds Jesus in the jail cell. Everybody does. I've never been in a prison that wasn't full of men and women. In the case of the interviews I've done in women's prisons, every single one of them is innocent of the crime that they committed. Every single one. And most of them, not all of them, but most of them have found religion behind bars. And they all say that they would never, ever do it again. And I'm sure that was the same for Stoney Rivers, who managed to persuade people that he was deserving of a second chance. And Christine Gregoire gave it to him. And now, because of that, it appears a 24-year-old man was shot in the face and killed. Stoney Rivers is charged with that crime. Should convicted criminals actually have to serve out their entire sentence? You'll find our Twitter poll a couple of places. Number one, at LarsLarson.com, brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Rock, gravel, sand, and topsoil. Let the Dan Jones trucks put it where you really want it and save your aching back. You'll also find it on Twitter, at Lars Larson Show. And we're going to get some nonsense in and then back to your calls at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know he got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
The war on cars at Portland City Hall has a brand new weapon. It's called congestion pricing. For decades now, the anti-automobile folks who populate the city council have counted on horrible traffic to drive you out of your car and onto transit. That's actually true in most of the big cities in the Northwest. The metro area hasn't built a new freeway in 30 years. And now Rose City commuters spend, get this is the actual number, 77 hours a year stuck in traffic. It is the 10th worst traffic in America. It is tied with Washington, D.C., which has three times the population. Yet during the past 30 years, the per capita use of transit has actually dropped because people love their cars. They love the freedom and the mobility that they get from their cars. So now the city council plans to deploy a new weapon. If you drive during rush hour, you'll have to pay a fee for that privilege. How much will the fee be? Well, we don't know yet, but suffice it to say, the council plans a fee high enough that it drives enough traffic off local roads to relieve congestion. If you make enough money, you can still use the roads at rush hour. If you don't, then either get on the bus or tell your boss you can't get to work on time. The elites at City Hall don't really care about abusing car drivers because we pay for their cars and we pay the drivers who ferry them around.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Arm Yourself Gun Store in Hillsboro. Proudly veteran-owned and open 7 days a week. ArmYourselfStore.com.
Well, today's Daily Grill, for all the reasons I just mentioned, goes to the Portland City Council in this case, although I'm happy to apply it to the Seattle City Council or Spokane or Eugene or any other city that does this, and they're all thinking about it, which is applying congestion pricing. And this week, the Portland City Council votes on it, on whether or not it might be necessary to force people out of their cars. And by the way, from our Facebook page, you'll find that at Facebook at The Lars Larson Show. Gene LaRue writes in, Lars, tolling is an abject failure on the I-405 east of Seattle. These people never learn from others' mistakes. They always claim it was a brilliant idea with failed interpretation or implementation. They, of course, do it the right way, not laughing my rear end off. These morons ought to be impeached. I couldn't agree with you more, Gene. I think you're absolutely right. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com, is brought to you by Papa's Shoehorns, the perfect Christmas gift for everyone. On the web at papashoehorns.com. Just look it up. Henry writes in, Lars, we're going on 9 years now with no Justice Department in Washington, D.C. Why? Trump keeps hammering away at the most corrupt Congress in U.S. history, and he's the one being investigated. Figure that one out. If people outside of D.C. can understand how flawed our political leaders are, why are they not getting the message? The leader of Russia must be the envy of members in the House and Senate because he has power and money and a defenseless population. The elitist politicians must have dreams of being just like him. They claim there is no real mafia in this country. But nothing could be further from the truth. We have political mobsters in place of the mafia now. All Trump has to do is bring them down with RICO, signed Henry. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We're live all over the Pacific Northwest on more than 20 radio stations that serve Idaho, Washington, and Oregon on the Radio Northwest Network. I hate it when I make a mistake, but I love it when my audience is quick on this. Rob wrote in and said, Lars, you said Lacey, when Lacey, Washington, the town, instead of Lakewood, and it was Lakewood, where four law enforcement officers were murdered 8 years ago this Wednesday. And Rob, I stand corrected. Four Lakewood PD officers murdered. He said, I now agree on Huckabee and the killer. That's right. When people say that I don't criticize Republicans, I'll tell you what, I will fault Governor Mike Huckabee all day long and twice on Sunday about that, at that decision in particular, although he was much of a rhino on a bunch of other issues as well. And I didn't particularly like his campaigns for president because I got the feeling they were only glorified attempts to sell more books. But having said that, it also adds to the argument, why in the world do we let politicians make these decisions to allow people out who've been sentenced to life in prison and then some? And that applied to Maurice Clemens, the man who murdered the four police officers in Lakewood, Washington, 8 years ago this Wednesday. It also applies to Stoney Rivers, who is now accused of murdering a man earlier this month, allowed out of prison a couple of years ago, given clemency a couple of years ago, and then allowed out of prison about 2 years ago by Governor Christine Gregoire at the time. There should be a real question asked every single time somebody is given a commutation or a lightening of their original sentence. Is this actually justified? Let's go to Mike in Albany. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks, Lars. First of all, I agree with you that that just seems wrong to release them early. You said something about how you think maybe there should be a case where it could be seldom or rare. My concern with that is your definition of seldom or rare could absolutely be different than their seldom. And so I'm not sure how you'd actually do that.
You know how I do it? It wouldn't be a formal limitation. It would be an assumption that the public rarely sees this happen. And when it does happen, and here's where the news media could help us with this. I don't know that they want to help us with this, but you could emphasize the rare nature of this. I mean, for example, you know that there have been Democrats talking about impeaching Donald Trump now for more than a year. They started on the 9th of November of last year, and they've kept up right. The talk since then. And we always remind people that the impeachment of a president or the impeachment of a member of the Senate or the House is a very, very rare thing. It is done under rare circumstances, and that's the safeguard I'd use on it. But you need to have a news media that's willing to remind you that when Governor Christine Gregoire or some other governor pardons people or commutes people, that the question is raised, hey, this doesn't happen very often. Is a commutation really justified in this instance? And I would hope the news media would help in emphasizing that.
Yeah, and we don't know that that's going to happen in our media. But what if there is a form of consequence that could take place? So if the governor wants to sign their name to releasing that person, if they do go back to some former way where they commit murders, what if there's a consequence to the person that pardoned them?
Yeah, and what would it be? Would we put somebody in prison? Because then there would never be pardon. Well,
I don't know. The
reason I throw up that idea, Mike, is that I get that idea from people every time I bring up something like this. They say, well, if Gregoire wants to pardon somebody, if they go out and they rape or they murder, then Gregoire should get the time in prison they would have done for rape or murder. And there's no way you're going to get that kind of penalty added to the law.
Correct. I don't think we can do that, but there's got to be some sort of penalty if they're going to release these people early, because I'm a full advocate. Hey, if you commit a crime, you need to fulfill that punishment for it.
Yep.
But if we're sane, if we're sticking, if I'm going to stick my neck out for somebody and say, hey, I think Lars deserves a second chance here, I'm willing to put my name on the line, then I should suffer some sort of consequence if that goes the wrong way.
I agree with you, but how? What do we do to add that? Because, you know, you could say, well, they have to take the political consequences. The fact that we only give this power to governors and presidents means that Christine Gregoire is not in a position where she needs the political approval of Washington State. She's already been governor. And I don't get the impression she's going to run for higher office. If she runs for some other office, then I guess we could say, well, then when she does, we'll have to remind people of what she did. But I have a feeling this will go without consequence of any kind for her.
I'm sure it will.
Anyway, I very much appreciate it. I'm glad for the call. 866, hey, Lars. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. I mentioned Judge John Rule and his decision. This happened sort of over the Thanksgiving holiday, or late on Wednesday. Seattle passed an ordinance last summer that would tax all personal income over $250,000. So we're talking about the top, about 5% of all wage earners. In Seattle, it might be a little broader than that. And they would be taxed at a pretty punitive rate, 2.25%. So let's see, 2.25% of $1 million, yeah, would be a lot of money. And if it's $10 million, in other words, if you're talking about the super rich, because you know who this is aimed at. This is aimed at the fact that Seattle is the home to Jeff Bezos, to Bill Gates, to Paul Allen, the whole long list of multi-millionaires, as well as a lot of people who worked for them, who are also people who still make a lot of money. Lawmakers said they understood that it would end up in the courts and almost certainly at the Washington State Supreme Court. In fact, they said it was part of the plan to undo a 1930s court decision. This is from the Seattle Times, that has long stopped the state from imposing taxes on income. In other words, they want to blow up the legal protection you have against an income tax. And they want to do it by going after very wealthy people in Seattle, because they know there aren't going to be a lot of people who will stand up and object to that. And then if they get the courts, the Washington Supreme Court, which seems to be on the payroll of the public employee unions these days, if the Washington Supreme Court will overturn that law from the decision from the 30s that makes an income tax illegal, why, it's off to the races. Then they can have income taxes on all classes of income earners, including you. So understand, this isn't just aimed at the super rich. It's aimed eventually at everybody who draws a paycheck inside the state of Washington. It's Monday after Thanksgiving, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday live on the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Pacific Northwest. And I've mentioned some pardons and commutations that have been given out by governors as widely varied as Mike Huckabee, the Republican, who's run for president of the United States, and Christine Gregoire, who just a few years ago, about 4 years ago, commuted the sentence of somebody who was supposed to spend the rest of his life in prison. Why? Because Washington State has a law called three strikes. In fact, a number of states have laws that are called three strikes laws. If you commit the appropriate kind of crime several times, three times, and you're convicted of it, remember, these are only the ones that you get caught and convicted of, then you go to prison for the rest of your life. Stoney Rivers was just such a man. Instead, 4 years ago, Governor Christine Gregoire, who was governor at the time, decided to give him a commutation of his sentence. And then 2 years ago, he was allowed out on supervised release. His supervision ended in January of this year. And it only took him a few months past the end of that before he was involved in a crime. He is now accused of shooting a man in the face, and he is now going to face murder charges. Some of these suggestions are good. Stephen writes in from Eugene, listening on KPNW. Lars, rather than putting a governor in prison, if someone they pardon commits a crime, why not hold them financially responsible? Say, okay, you've got the power to pardon somebody or commute their sentence, but if they commit another crime, we're going to hold you financially responsible. That's not a bad one. And in fact, I kind of like that one. And JG writes in about the tolling idea. To be fair and effective, the tolling price must be set to the net worth plus income of each individual. Does that mean when Bill Gates drives around, if he's hit with that toll, that he'd get the biggest toll? And oh no, I forgot. As of last week, Jeff Bezos is richer than Bill Gates. Bezos is now the richest guy in the world and the first single individual to be worth $100 billion. Yeah, imagine that. A lot of money. And he had, I think they said of Black Friday, I think of all the cyber sales on Black Friday, Amazon.com was responsible for 50% of them. So he's obviously done very well. Let's go to DJ in Puyallup. Hey, DJ, welcome to the Lawrence Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks. Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller. I'm a little nervous.
Oh, no worries.
But I wondered, you know, we get those pamphlets and the voter pamphlets in the mail telling us about the candidates and the governors and the judges even. What if judges, and I know you're speaking on a governor level, and that could be at work as well.
Sure.
What if we had some kind of system where we could let voters know, you know, even by different categories, you know, say a judge releases a felon and he goes out and murders someone, or a drunk driver gets released on his own recognizance and he goes out and he kills again, or kills someone with his car drunk. What if, you know, we can see their records based on some kind of strike or mark or due date or something that would let us know that this judge or this governor has done this and maybe this many times?
I think it's a terrific idea. Now the question is, should we, well, I don't mind if it's done by a private group. It could be done.
Yeah.
I mean, government releases all kinds of data. They usually release data that makes them look good. And I say that because both Oregon, Washington, to a lesser extent, Idaho, the payrolls of state and local agencies have literally millions of dollars of what are called PIOs, public information officers. Now, we say officer. They're not really an officer. They're a FLAC. They're a PR agent. Except that if they called them the school district's PR agent or the Department of Education's PR agent or the Department of Transportation's PR agent, it would sound as though they were trying to puff up their own accomplishments, which is exactly what they do. And those people are on the payroll, and believe me, they draw big paychecks to go out and represent governors and senators and everything else.
But
well,
Wouldn't
it be nice if we had somebody who was independent of all those people who said, my job is to serve the public by telling the public. And in fact, you could even write it into their job description. Your job is to not only tell the public the most encouraging things about government, but also the things that nobody wants to be heard about government. Like last year, the state of Washington released 5,000 people who had been convicted of crimes. 1,000 were released early, and at least 700 of them went on to be accused of committing more crimes. I mean, I'd love it if the mainstream media would do it, but I don't see them doing it for the most part.
I know. I'm just wondering, there's no bipartisan organization out there or one that could be started to do this for us?
Well,
I know in the pamphlet, there you get that little blurb at the bottom for each candidate and judge and governor, pros and cons.
Well,
and I know that doesn't really address it, and that probably speaks to what you were talking about.
And here's the thing. When you say bipartisan, I'm going to tell you that both parties have problems with this issue. The Democrats talk about restorative justice, where they don't believe in putting people in jail or in prison. And the Republicans have their own version of it, where they don't want to lock people up either. And frankly, I think locking people up has a history of making the greatest difference in recidivism, the act of a criminal going back and committing another crime of almost anything.
I think bipartisan was probably the wrong word. I should have used the word for non-interest in good or bad on the candidate. You know, somebody independent completely.
And that would be
nice.
There
is no such animal.
That would be nice. It really would be tough to find that person, because if Governor Jay Inslee hires this person, do you think they're going to go out and write reports saying that Jay Inslee has done a really lousy job?
I don't mean by Jay Inslee. I'm talking about whoever puts that pamphlet together, or somebody an organization or somebody who maybe doesn't go in the voter pamphlet. Maybe it can be in a whole separate pamphlet. I don't know.
I don't even mind if they put it online. I don't think it has to be printed on dead trees at all. You could actually put it online and say, the next time somebody says, hey, how many people are actually locked up in prison for marijuana, which is a very small number, by the way, although the mythology was that half our prisons are full of people locked up just for smoking joints. That is a load of hogwash, but...
Yeah, I know.
You know, I really appreciate the call, DJ. Thanks a lot for listening on Talk Radio 570. Let's go to Jeff in Kalama. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Lars. Hey, yeah, I was just thinking, you're talking about this thing with Judge Moore down in Alabama.
Yeah.
How all the liberals are up in arms about, you know, the things going on sexually in the past. And they're upset that it appears that Trump's supporting him now or whatever. There could be a reason for that. You know, if you think about it, looking at it from this standpoint, is if Judge Moore, if they do a write-in candidate, chances are you're going to get a Democrat elected. So Trump is pushing for Moore to be elected. All right, so he gets elected, he goes into the Senate, and then they do that process of expelling him.
Well, that's going to be a tough one, Jeff. That's going to be a tough one, and let me tell you why. Refusing to seat a senator in that case takes a two-thirds vote. That means you've got to get either every single Democrat and about one-third of all the Republicans, or the reverse of that, every single Republican and one-third of all the Democrats. And then the question's going to come up, well, if you won't seat Judge Moore after the people of Alabama have chosen him, are you going to be willing to kick out Al Franken? Are you going to be willing to kick out John Conyers, who apparently settled? He was trying to get sex from an associate, you know, a young employee of the United States Congress. And when he couldn't get sex from her, she quit and filed a discrimination suit saying that she was unhappy with this. So he paid her off with $27,000 in taxpayer cash to silence her about her claim that he had tried to get sex from her as an employee. And so are you going to be willing to kick those people out? I think the Democrats know they're opening up a whole can of worms. They can talk any way they want right now. But if on December the 12th, which is when the election is, the people of Alabama choose Roy Moore, and right now the polls seem to be weighing in his favor, do they have the guts to say he should be kicked out, but Al Franken should not be kicked out?
Well, see, that's my point as far as the direction that Trump is going on. This would be a win-win for him. Even if they were to, and chances are, like you said, it wouldn't happen, but if they were had the ability to expel him, who is that governor in Alabama going to replace him with? They're going to replace him with another Republican. If they do this write-in thing, all right, chances are...
Well, they're not going to do a write-in. It's way too late to try a write-in candidate.
Right.
So, but do you think the president should get involved in that, or should he say that's really up to the people of Alabama, and then after that it's up to the members of the U.S. Senate? I think he should leave it in their pocket.
He's already said that. He says it should be up to the people of Alabama as to who they put in there.
So what would you like him to do?
But the elites in Washington, D.C. don't like that, you know?
Well, they cannot like it. So what? You know, they can sit and gripe about it all day long. But the problem is they should understand there are problems in both parties with sexual perverts that they should have shown the door a long time ago, like John Conyers. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your calls at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and your emails. I have to share this with you, and I mentioned it at the top of the hour, with all the talk in Washington, D.C., about the sexual escapades of members of Congress and members of the U.S. Senate. And, of course, there's talk about even President Trump, who's now pushing back on some of the things that were said during the campaign, including the so-called Access Hollywood tapes. Not sure how wise that is. But this was completely crazy. There is a young lady by the name of Cokie Roberts who has long been associated with fake news. That is, she is part of the National Public Radio that your tax dollars support. Now, you guys never got a vote on this, but members of Congress decided to give them, I think it's about $500 million of your money. So this young lady is very, very benefited by your tax dollars. She actually was on ABC over the weekend, and she was asked about why it is that even though Judge Roy Moore of Alabama is accused of these, in some cases, hideous things that he's accused of doing to very young ladies about 30 and 40 years ago, why it is that people in Alabama might still vote for him. Because, you see, this is, I think, what's going to happen on December 12th. I think the state of Alabama is still going to give Judge Roy Moore a majority vote to be its next U.S. senator. And that sets up a tough situation for the Democrats. Do they say we need to reject the decision of a U.S. state like Alabama because we don't like the decision they've made? Well, there are a lot of cases where people have been elected from different states that some other folks in the rest of the country didn't like. But here's where Cokie Roberts went absolutely off the rails this weekend. She explained that apparently, from her point of view, non-white collar women, remember, this is being spoken by a young lady, Cokie Roberts, who makes over $1 million a year for being a reporter and has been making over $1 million a year for being a reporter for a long, long time. So she's very much an elite. She's very much a white collar worker. But she has a very dim view of non-white collar workers, meaning blue collar workers, especially apparently if they're young women, because she believes that if you don't make a six-figure paycheck like she does, if you're not one of the elites, that you're so used to being sexually abused that you don't even know what sexual abuse is. Take a listen to the way she said it.
One of the things that to keep in mind is in the base, even women are suspicious about these sexual harassment claims. And part of the reason for that is that women who are not in fancy white-collar jobs...
Like mine, she could have said. She could have said, like my job, where you make a lot of money and you circulate in the halls of power and you talk to senators and governors and presidents. She means people not like her.
Often have really awful things happen to them on the job. They are assaulted. They are raped. They have horrible things happen to them.
Now, I don't know how she knows this, because I don't know how many blue-collar workers Cokie Roberts actually knows outside of her own household staff or maybe the person who drives her to work in her car. But she apparently knows a lot about them, that they have awful lives where they are regularly and routinely sexually abused and raped.
And so when they hear... women say, he talked dirty to me, or he came on to me. They think, big deal.
Really? I'm wondering how many blue-collar friends of Cokie Roberts, you know, the kind of person who works at the lunch counter, somebody who draws a minimum wage job or just above, says to Cokie Roberts, you know, I've been sexually abused so much in my job on a regular basis that I don't know what the big deal is. I'm willing to bet that this is entirely in the imagination of Cokie Roberts. Now, it's the imagination of, as I said, a lady who's been making seven figures as a paycheck for a long time, who likely doesn't have much association on a day-to-day basis with people who make a blue-collar wage, but she has a definitive idea of what they're like, that they are regularly and routinely abused, and that because of that abuse, they don't really know what the big deal is anymore. I don't think there's a single woman in America who actually says that kind of thing, other than Cokie Roberts. But believe it or not, there are people who listen to Cokie Roberts who think she's one of the greatest things when it comes to women as reporters and representing other women, that she can speak for them. Well, you know what? I wonder if you still believe that after you hear her say something like that, where she clearly has a very low opinion of the non-elites. If you're one of the elites, you know what's going on. If you're not one of the elites, you don't know what's going on. And then it begs the question, why is it so many of the elites who knew Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey and the rest of these folks put up with it for all that time and didn't say a single word about it? What's your explanation for that, Cokie? You've got the Lars Larson Show.
One of the things to keep in mind is in the base, even women are suspicious about these sexual harassment claims. And part of the reason for that is that women who are not in fancy white-collar jobs often have really awful things happen to them on the job. They are assaulted. They are raped. They have horrible things happen to them. And so when they hear women say he talked dirty to me or he came on to me, they think big deal.
Big deal. That's what Cokie Roberts had to say. And boy, has that generated some response here. Glad to have you with me live on the Radio Northwest Network and glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And Laura's on the line. Hey, Laura, thanks a lot for listening. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was actually just laughing out loud when you referred to Cokie as a young lady. And I had to double check because I listen to her on NPR sometimes, and she's 73.
Well, I was trying thinking, to be polite.
There's no way. There's no. That's not polite. There's no way if she was a man, you would call her a young man. I mean, with somebody who's 73.
Well, should I call her an old lady? Well, that wouldn't be very polite, would it?
You could just refer to her with respect. Like, you strike me as someone who believes in respecting, you know, people who are your elders.
Should
she's
I?
Older than you.
She's 15 years. She's 15 years older than me. So do I have to? Do I have to give respect to somebody who says such a colossally stupid thing about women?
It's just not the first time I've heard you refer. To me, a young lady is, you know, I'm in my 30s. I'm going to guess.
Would it be okay if I called you as a young 20s? Lady?
It's relative, so I suppose, because, you know, you're probably 20 years older than I am.
At
so
least.
I guess that would be appropriate, but like I said, I don't think you would call a man who's 73 a young man. It's weird.
Well, I might. I don't know. I might. If he was a veteran, I might especially call him a young man. This young man would like to tell us about World War II. I'd be happy to do that. But you think I have slighted Cokie Roberts?
I think it's inherently. I just point out that you, you know, it's not the first time. I just think you don't respect women in general.
Oh, why would you think I don't respect women? I'm taking issue. Laura, the very thing I'm taking issue with. Go ahead.
You know, I just listen to you enough, and I just, it's a pattern, too. It's not just Cokie. Well, no, everybody seems to be a young lady.
Well, you apparently know her well enough to be on a first-name basis. But tell me this, Laura. When she says something like that, the thing I wanted to comment on was she has a very dim view of women who don't make the kind of salary she makes. And she thinks it's about she made it clear that it's about money. Because she said, if you're not a white-collar worker, and you could have just as easily added, like me, because she's somebody who makes a seven-figure salary. So she says, well, if you're one of those people who doesn't make the kind of salary I make, then you get assaulted all the time, and you don't have any idea what the significance is of Roy Moore saying things or being accused of saying things, which I think suggests a really dim view of women who don't make a lot of money like her, doesn't it?
I work a blue-collar job myself. So
you don't think she was talking about you?
I think what she's talking about is that people who don't make a lot of money don't have access to the legal system. They may not have HR department.
They don't? Hold on, Laura.
Do you make a lot of money?
Let me ask you, do you make a lot of money? You don't have to say how much, but do you make a lot?
No.
Okay, so you are the kind of person you were just describing. If somebody were to assault you, I would hope that you would pick up the phone and call the police. If you called the police and said, I've been assaulted, how long do you think it would take for the police to get to your house? 5 minutes or less?
In Portland, where I live, I don't know, a couple of days maybe?
No, 5 minutes or less. If you said you had just been assaulted by somebody, they would send somebody lights and siren to your house. And they would assign a district attorney to take a look at the case. They would assign detectives to find the bad guy who did this to you or woman that did this to you. So do you not have access to the legal system?
Are you saying that someone who's sexually harassed at work, they're going to send a police cruiser within 5 minutes?
Well, no, I'm not talking. I said assaulted. Somebody who's been assaulted because she
sexual
just
sexual assault and sexual harassment. I feel like you're meddling.
Well,
too. Very
hold on.
Things.
I'll
in
tell you what. Just so we
different.
Know what Cokie, as you call her, was referring to.
Are suspicious about these sexual harassment claims, and part of the reason for that is that women who are not in fancy white collar jobs,
like mine,
often have really awful things happen to them on the job. They are assaulted. They are raped. They have horrible things.
Now, hold on. That's what Cokie was talking about. Ms. Roberts, the not young lady. I'll just to make you happy, I'll call her the not young lady.
I believe she's a grandma. She's definitely not a young lady.
She's not the young lady. That she's referring to women being raped on the job, assaulted on the job. And you've said that what the women who don't make big salaries, and you admit you don't make a big salary, have no access to the legal system. I was suggesting that if you were raped or assaulted, as Cokie Roberts referred to, you could pick up the phone and have the cops at your location in 5 minutes. Correct?
I think if we're talking about harassment.
No, we're not. We're talking about assault.
They may not even know that there's a legal recourse. There are options,
Laura,
that they have.
We're talking about assault because that's what Ms. Roberts referred to. She referred to women being assaulted and raped on the job. And then you've said,
you know, well, what? If they were a maid in a hotel and one of the illegal aliens, as you call them, I highly doubt that. They would be worried about people.
Even illegal aliens job, right? Have access to the legal system. In fact, they often get better protection than citizens
they're
do.
They're scared. That's why. They're scared of the police, especially under Trump's regime.
Hold on. Does Donald Trump run the police in your community?
He gives directions to Jeff Sessions.
No, he doesn't.
Who runs the
Hold on.
The
local
works at the pleasure of the president.
Laura, you live in Portland, right? That means your police department is run by 5 screaming left-wing liberals on the city council, and Danielle Outlaw, who's, I'm guessing, is fairly liberal. She came from Oakland, California. I'm betting her politics are pretty liberal. So if you're telling me that the local police are being run at the direction of Donald Trump, when in fact they're being run by 5 of the most liberal idiots you could ever find.
Who is the top law enforcement officer in the entire country? Who is it?
Well, in the country? Jeff Sessions. But he doesn't have anything to say with how the Portland police run.
What kind of director are they under right now from the Justice?
Well, they're under a consent decree that Sessions is trying to get out of right now because he doesn't think they need to be directed by Washington, D.C. They're actually...
Well, what does it matter if Sessions doesn't control the police department or doesn't direct them at all?
Well, you know...
What's the matter? Why are they trying to get out of it?
Because they don't think, and I don't think so either, I don't think the federal government should tell a local police department how to run. Do you? Do you?
I think they should probably. It depends. I think they should probably.
Depends on what.
Ted
Wheeler.
They offer guidance on how to run their police.
Ted Wheeler is
appropriate.
Ted Wheeler is the mayor of Portland, and he's the police commissioner.
Yeah.
So shouldn't Ted Wheeler run the police department?
He does run the police department, but the judicial department gives directives and guidance about how to do that. I didn't realize that was a bad thing.
It is a bad thing. Well, do you like local control, or would you rather have decisions made from 2,000 miles away?
It depends on the issue.
Well, no, hold on. Let's take any issue. How does your local school?
Okay, civil rights.
Okay, should your
You don't trust
Kate Brown and company to decide on civil rights matters for Oregon? You want the decision made 2,000 miles away?
When they had to desegregate schools, it was imperative.
70 years ago?
That was in the 60s, yes.
Yeah.
That's an example. You said give an example. That's an example. Where it's I definitely think the federal government has a role to play.
Of course, now that you hate the current president, am I right? You hate the current president?
I think the current president is bad for America.
Okay.
So now
you don't want your local police or schools run from Washington, D.C., right?
No, we elected him as a people. He is the president. So it is what it is. Obama said, elections have consequences.
All right. I will from now on.
We have no room to.
Because you have objected, I will refer to Cokie Roberts as the not young lady.
Okay, that's fine. Anybody who's a grandma, she's just not a young lady. That was my only point. Oh. Got off topic, but...
I just thought I was being polite, but Laura, I appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Our Twitter poll today, should convicted criminals serve out their entire sentences? This goes back to a case involving a man 50 years old now, Stoney Rivers, who was convicted for the third time on a three strikes you're out basis, should have been locked up for the rest of his life. Governor Christine Gregoire in 2013 commuted his life sentence. He was released a couple of years later in January of 2015 after he had served barely 20 years. And now he is accused in the shooting death of a 24-year-old man who was shot in the face at a motel in Kent in a little dispute that may have had something to do with drugs. Should we make people serve out their actual sentences? I would vote yes on that. Apparently, Governor Christine Gregoire would vote the other way, and there are a lot of other Democrats and even some Republicans who would go the other direction as well. Kara is on the line from Woodland, Washington. Hey, Kara, thanks a lot for listening. I take it you called in about the comments of Cokie Roberts of the taxpayer-funded NPR. What do you say?
Hi, Lars. How you doing? I'm a first-time caller, and I just wanted to let you know my full, well, opinions. I completely disagree with that. I mean, it does happen, but not as much as they're trying to demonize it, and I also feel that this whole attack, this whole sexual allegations, it's so over the top that it's become this. It's not just, okay, we need to look out for this anymore. It's suspicious behavior
What you're saying. Well, don't be nervous. Don't worry about it. But I understand. I think what you're saying, Kara.
Hello?
I'm right here. Can you hear me, Kara? Sounds like her phone may be going out. So I'll see if we can get her to a better line and see if we can take care of it that way. If you can get her to a better line, we'll put her back on once she's on a better line. That's Kara on line two. Let's go to Chrissy. Hey, Chrissy, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I was listening to you, Lars, while I do my housework, and
thank you.
I heard what Cokie. Yeah, you're welcome. I like your show.
Thank you.
And I was listening to what Cokie Roberts said, and that is insulting not only to women who work in blue collar jobs, but to men that work in blue collar jobs, because she's basically saying that all blue collar men are just harassing women, and that these blue collar women are just taking it, and it's furthermore. It enrages me, actually, because it perpetuates this idea that people that work blue-collar jobs are, you know, stupid and ignorant and have no manners or couth. And I just don't, it's not true. I worked lots of blue-collar jobs before I stayed home. I have friends that work blue-collar jobs. There's not, you know, all this harassment and rape going on.
I would agree with you. And Chrissy, you're right to identify that this really deals, even though Cokie Roberts' comments were specifically about women, and that women see this all the time if they're in blue-collar jobs. The really strange thing about this is most of the most recently accused sexual either molesters or harassers are elites. You know, there are people like Harvey Weinstein, who makes millions and millions of dollars, or Kevin Spacey, who makes millions and millions of dollars. And
yeah,
I don't know about you, Chrissy, but, you know, I grew up in a blue collar background. Most of my extended family is blue collar. And if there was a guy in a blue collar setting who liked to do what Harvey Weinstein did, which was, you know, pull his pants down and pleasure himself in front of a woman who had not agreed to watch that little show. Do you know what the blue collar friend, your blue collar friends,
exactly.
They would have hauled him out behind the party, wherever the party was going on, and they
and
would
beat
have
him up.
They would have educated him about how you behave in front of women.
And now it's interesting that you say that, Lars, because when I was in college, you know, I read a really fascinating study that actually said that blue collar men tend to, and this is just a statistic, so, you know,
sure.
It doesn't mean anything, but that blue-collar men tend to actually be better husbands and cheat on their wives less, less than, like, doctors or lawyers or those kind of, or politicians. And it was an interesting study.
And I
agree with you. My husband's blue-collar. All our friends are blue collar, and yeah, if someone was acting like that, they would tell them you don't treat ladies like that. You don't, you know.
And if they kept it up, they would be educated. I mean, in some
way. Yeah.
And whereas what's funny is the reaction, because you know that when they describe these incidents that Weinstein and Spacey and some of these folks are at, they're surrounded by other elites, other people who make either hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. They're in the movies. They hang around celebrities. And what's funny is none of the elites around them thought to say, hey, let's set Harvey straight on this. You don't behave that way. And that kind of phenomena hasn't been talked about a lot, that in a blue collar setting, I can imagine that I could see somebody saying, no, you are going to stop that behavior in front of these ladies right now, or my buddies and I are going to drag you out back or drag you out to the parking lot. But apparently in the polite environs of the elites that Cokie Roberts was talking about, where, oh, we people who are white collar folks who make a lot of money, we don't tolerate that kind of behavior. Well, apparently you do. You tolerate it to the point where when Charlie Rose, you know who he is now, right? But Charlie Rose, when there were young ladies that would go to the higher-ups at CBS and say, I go out to work at this guy's house because they were assigned to work out there, and he walks out of the shower with no clothes on and walks around buck naked, that the women who were above these interns said, no. We're not going to pursue that kind of claim against Charlie Rose. You don't know who you're talking about. In other words, they were other elites, ladies who make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in their high responsibility jobs.
See, and I just don't think, I think what Cokie Roberts said is absurd, really. And obviously she doesn't know anything about, because I was a maid for a little while, you know, for a maid, like Mary Maids, you know?
Yeah.
And there was a couple that I cleaned for that would come out naked and stuff. It was really strange. But anyway, I told my boss about it, and he said, you know, okay, you don't have to go and clean at the house anymore.
That makes sense, doesn't it? Thank you for the call. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. And glad to take those calls. Boy, I'll tell you what, I've had some interesting reactions about this whole Cokie Roberts business. But there's a lot here in the Northwest to talk about as well. One of them is our Twitter poll for the day. Should convicted criminals serve out their entire sentence? I think the easy answer to that is yes, of course. Make them serve out their entire sentence. Instead, what we've got is Stoney Rivers, 50 years of age, Stoney Rivers, who is now accused in the shooting death of a 24-year-old man killed at a Kent motel by being shot in the face earlier this month. He was commuted. His sentence, his life sentence in prison, was commuted by Governor Christine Gregoire, who offers up the defense that, well, the prosecuting attorney thought he should also have his sentence commuted, and so did the parole and probation board. Fine. Let's fire all of them. Hey, I wanted to mention this as well. There is a story breaking out of Eugene that has a lot to say about our VA medical system. I'll give credit where it's due to KEZI, the ABC affiliate in Eugene. Investigators will be returning to Roseburg and Eugene clinics after Thanksgiving to continue interviewing staff about personnel issues, medical care, and patient safety. This comes after several allegations of poor practices at local VA clinics. Former and current medical staff members told KEZI they're desperate for change. Several nurses who currently work at the VA Eugene Healthcare Center said retaliation and bullying are common practices. A former surgeon says the management at the VA destroyed his career. I really wanted to come back and give back to soldiers, says Dr. Scott Russey. He served 29 years in the military, 4 years at a local hospital, and then he decided it was time to get back to serving veterans, and he joined the medical team at the VA Eugene Healthcare Center. He said, I can relate to them. So this is a guy who's been in the medical field a long time. He's been in the military a long time. And what happened to him? He worked as a trauma surgeon near Afghanistan. He says he's been lucky. I've been mortared before. I haven't been in combat, but I've worked at a combat hospital. I've had mortars and rockets come at me. He says, but his career has been destroyed in Eugene, where the VA fired him after only 4 weeks of working at the VA clinic full time. He said, my career has been destroyed. He said he was targeted after questioning the chief of surgery. I challenged him. I disagreed with what he advised on cases because I knew that what he was advising was wrong. I was very uncomfortable with not having my patients have access to me, and that was his decision. And now, as a result, There's an investigation going on to find out exactly what is going on there and whether or not whistleblowers within that system can actually get anything done about the problems. Let's go to Susan in Vancouver. Hey, Susan, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hi, Lars. I got to tell you, Cokie Roberts embarrassed herself horribly, and she should apologize and then just shut up and possibly not say anything ever again. She, you know, it's amazing to me that her mindset is pretty much the mindset of Hillary Clinton, that women are just too stupid because they don't have as much money as she does. They're too stupid to realize they should have voted for Hillary. We just didn't know that she was going to be, that she should have been our choice. And it's frustrating and it's infuriating.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. And it just, you know, Susan, I think about, I wish we had a single standard in this country instead of a double standard. Can you imagine what they would have done to a Republican office seeker or office holder if he had come out and said, well, you know, blue-collar women just don't understand sexual abuse because they get abused so much that they fail to even understand what it is. He would have been strung up from a tree, but Cokie Roberts, her comments were actually taken seriously by the woman who was interviewing her. And it was a woman interviewing her, listening to her say that blue-collar women don't know what sexual abuse is because they get abused so much.
All women know what sexual abuse is, unless they're too young to realize what's going on. All women understand it. They don't like it. Of course, it's true that some don't have the ability to retaliate through court systems or are in a position where to voice what's going on is detrimental to their career,
mm-hmm.
in which case I say go get a different career. But to say that you don't understand what's going on, it's horrible. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I would agree with you. And it's funny that, you know, usually when I'm doing an interview, Susan, I look for opportunities to say, well, how do we contrast this with this? And if I had been doing that interview with Cokie Roberts, I might have said to her, well, hold on, you're saying that blue-collar women don't understand it because they don't make paychecks like yours. What does that say about the white-collar women who surrounded Harvey Weinstein, who knew what Harvey was all about, or knew Kevin Spacey, or knew Louis C.K., or knew any of these other people who've now been accused, who knew Al Franken, and who saw the things, realized the complaints? John Conyers, when he has to pay off a staffer because he's demanded sex from her and she won't put out, so he says, well, then I'm going to fire you. And she appropriately comes back at him and says, you can't do that to me. And he has to pay her $27,000 in compensation for inappropriately suggesting that providing sex for the congressman was part of her job. You know, you'd think, well, no, but that's exactly what's going on here. And you've got, you know, Nancy Pelosi and others who show up on TV this weekend and they say, well, we don't know who these women are who are accusing Congressman Conyers. And I thought, yes, you do. One of them talked to The Washington Post. One of them filed a lawsuit and one of them got a settlement. And the settlement was by name because I don't know if you've heard this or not, Susan, but the mechanism that Congressman Conyers used, he didn't want to go through the official channels to pay off this woman, to keep her silent. So what he did was he had his office set up a phony payroll account and gave her what the unions like to call, in days gone by, a no-show job. That is, you're signed up to get a paycheck, but you don't have to actually show up. You just get the check.
Like a nepotism job.
Well, yeah, I mean, nepotism would be giving it to your niece, but no-show is where you get a job, but you don't have to show up for it, and you still get the check. And so, of course, they know her name. They know her name because all they'd have to do is say, we want the list of all the people who were in the congressman's office that year. Now show us the name of the person whose employment ended at a certain point, and then ask a couple of people in his office, was this lady at the job every day? No, she wasn't. She just got a paycheck and didn't have to show up. And so they know exactly what her name is, and yet people like Pelosi will say, oh, we have no idea who's accusing Conyers. And by the way, I hadn't realized till I read it this morning in a column written by a friend of mine, Jim Garrity from National Review. Conyers has apparently showed up for two major events within the last couple of years in his pajamas.
He needs to be gone. I think he's demented. I think he actually is suffering from dementia.
I couldn't disagree with you one little bit. I think that's exactly it, which may be why it is that he's, you know, that he's demanding sex from AIDS. The idea that Cokie Roberts thinks it's a problem of non-white-collar women not having the smarts to recognize what sexual abuse is just crazy. Thank you for the call, by the way. Let's go to Ron in Olympia. Hey, Ron, thanks for listening on Talk Radio 570. What's on your mind?
Oh, good afternoon, Lars. I wanted to talk a little bit about fake news.
Sure.
You know, people like Cokie Roberts. I'm a little disheveled here. I just got done while you were on your commercial there. And, you know, luckily the ABC News that wants to educate everybody had a posting there about Donald Trump saying, you know, basically talking about the meeting that he had with the Indians. I believe it had something to do with the World War II.
It was the code. You know, the code talkers, the Navajos who used Indian language to conceal information from the Japanese. Because they could send.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So he was giving them an honor. And while he was doing that, he made reference to Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas, which I think is actually kind of funny because Elizabeth Warren's the one who claimed to have Native American heritage that she doesn't have.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, what I find it ironic that ABC News reports that Mr. Trump was mocking her Indian heritage. What Indian heritage is that again?
Yeah, exactly. So he's mocking the non-existent Indian heritage she doesn't have.
Yes.
Well, but see,
I say that we can't fix our country till we fix fake news. This has got to be stopped. And I wonder when is fake news going to be held responsible? Is it one day? Is it 1 week? 1 month? 1 year after the facts of a case came out? Now we all know this came out last year. So where's ABC been?
I don't know, because, you know, a lot of us, I've been referring to her as Pocahontas because she's a faux Indian. She claimed she had Native American heritage. She knows she did not. And she could have owned up to it and said, you're right. I claim something that I'm not. And she should have apologized for it. Instead, she just kind of hung on to it, said, well, that's what we were always told in our family. Well, thank goodness your mom didn't tell you that you were the Queen of England and that you were the princess to be. So back in just a moment. Glad to get your calls on this Monday live on the Radio Northwest Network at 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, you want a very, very strange turn of a story this afternoon. You know the story about Roy Moore of Alabama. You know that he's been accused by a total of five women. One of the women said that when she was 14, that he talked her into taking her clothes off and touched her in ways that were inappropriate. There were other women who said that he had either gone on dates with them and tried to kiss them, or that in one case, a young woman said that he offered her a ride home and then tried to assault her, tried to kiss her, and she managed to escape from his car. Well, now the Washington Post reports that somebody has set up a sting of the press, and it appears to be some of our friends over at Project Veritas. Now, Veritas, I like what Veritas has done in the past. I'm not sure what to make of this, but it appears to be a sting operation aimed at the Washington Post, where a young woman apparently walked into the Post 2 weeks ago and said, I had an affair with Judge Roy Moore. And at the age of 15, I became pregnant, and then he pressured me to get an abortion. And apparently, this young woman was later seen walking into the offices of a place called Project Veritas, the organization that has used stings to pretty good effect to go after people who are, well, not necessarily being as honest as they could be. And Veritas has been very good about figuring out how to do this without breaking the law. But they say the Washington Post never published the young woman's story. They were continuing to investigate it. They'd apparently looked at it for a couple of weeks. And at the end of the day, they saw her at the end of 2 weeks walking into the offices of Project Veritas. They've also tried to talk to James O'Keefe, who's been on this program a number of times, about whether or not he was behind this attempt to perhaps figure out whether the Washington Post would bite on a false story about Judge Roy Moore. Because one of the most frightening aspects of this whole discussion of Roy Moore or Al Franken, a number of the things that these people are said to have done, like Al Franken is said to have grabbed a young woman's backside while she was taking a photo with him at a country fair, county fair, years ago. Well, how would you ever prove that? They're not provable in many cases. So I think what they were looking for was an opportunity to see, would the Washington Post publish a story for which factual backup was simply not available? Well, in this case, apparently the Post declined to post that and to put the picture up or the story up because they figured out who she was. But how did they do that? See, the Washington Post is based in Washington, D.C. They say that their reporters saw her walking into the offices of Project Veritas, which means it sounds to me as though the Washington Post had her followed. Now, I don't have any problem with that to try to find out what the truth is. As a reporter, let's figure out who this person is. But it does suggest something that we frequently hear from reporters, which is you don't want to have a chilling effect on the willingness of people to come forward and talk to you. This woman came to them with apparently a false story, but they had no way of knowing if it was false. In fact, they have no way of knowing today if it's false. She could have been walking into the offices of Project Veritas to tell them, yes, I've been talking to the Washington Post about a story that is true. But do you think it would have a chilling effect on other victims of whatever sexual perverts they're looking at in a story if the victims of that person knew that they would be followed by reporters and perhaps even followed 24 hours a day? She was apparently under investigation by the Washington Post, which was trying to determine whether or not she'd been telling the truth. Hey, by the way, I got to tell you this story. A nurse in Indiana is out of a job now because she suggested on Twitter, get this, the sons of white women, quote, should be sacrificed to the wolves. Indiana University confirmed in a statement on Sunday, yesterday, that a recently hired employee, this was a nurse, tied to troubling posts on social media, was no longer employed by the healthcare system. The offending tweet, which was posted from an account labeled Night Nurse, this is the woman, has been linked to an employee, Taisha Baker, who wrote, every white woman raises a detriment to society when they raise a son, the since-deleted post reads. Some with the highest propensity be a terrorist, a rapist, a racist, and domestic violence all-star. Historically, every son you had should be sacrificed to the wolves. And then she uses the word that begins with B and rhymes with rich. And she doesn't have a job anymore. You got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network. Hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend. We have a lot to be thankful for in this country, especially a mainstream press that seems about as sophisticated as one of my Scotty dogs. You show a shiny object to my Scotty dog, he will chase his tail around forever. You show a shiny object to the mainstream press, and they will go absolutely nuts. So what did President Trump do today? He was honoring the Navajo code talkers whose talents and skills during World War II meant so much to our efforts, particularly in the Pacific, to be able to hold information back from the Japanese because this was a language that the Navajos spoke that the Japanese had no way to translate, except that during his presentation, President Trump made reference to you folks have been around a long, long time. There's a woman who claims to have been around a long time. We call her Pocahontas. He was, of course, referring to Senator Elizabeth Warren. And whether you like it or not, Senator Warren has been given kind of a pass. Most people who faked their background and faked their identity the way that Pocahontas has faked her background and faked her identity would no longer be in public office. They certainly would not be holding an office like senator. They certainly would not be in a position where the Democrat Party sees them as one of the potential candidates to run for president of the United States when they have, in fact, faked their identity, claiming that they were Native American when they were not. And Elizabeth Warren has never fully explained that, but every time the press gets a shiny object, they're going to pay more attention to that than anything else. And so Donald Trump has called Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas in front of a Navajo group, and now the press corps is beside itself. There's another story breaking that I think is also going to be kind of amusing to watch play out this week, because usually big stories like this will start, or not start, but will end a week. Imagine this. The Washington Post is now reporting that it itself, the Washington Post, the newspaper owned by Jeff Bezos of Seattle, may in fact have been the target of a sting operation. Now, I fully applaud anybody who tries to sting a press organization. We should all be good enough to resist that, okay? Somebody tries to sell me a story that's not real, I should be capable of finding it out. Or if you end up presenting fake news, the minute you find out it's fake, you should come out and tell your audience, your listeners, your readers, your viewers, that it was fake. The Washington Post is talking about how it appears that it was the subject of a sting effort by a group called Project Veritas, which has stung government agencies and politicians, and to some extent the press as well. And what they did was they had a woman walk into the Washington Post, and over the last 2 weeks, she has been doing her best to persuade them that she was one of the many victims of Judge Roy Moore of Alabama, except this story had a little something extra to it. She claimed that she had been impregnated by Judge Roy Moore, who's now the leading candidate to be the next senator from the great state of Alabama, and that after she was impregnated by Judge Roy Moore, that she sought out an abortion at his insistence and got the abortion, and that all of this happened in the 1990s when she was about 15 years of age, and that now she is, of course, older than that. And they didn't quite get the Washington Post to bite on the story, if you will. So the Post apparently had her followed and saw her walking into the offices of Project Veritas in New York, which I think a reasonable person would believe this perhaps is a sting aimed at the Washington Post. Now, I'm going to tell you what I think is going to happen in the next few days. The Washington Post will act outraged, and a lot of other media, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNBC, MSNBC, CNN, the Chicken Noodle News Network, they will all act outraged as well on behalf of the Washington Post. They will say, how dare you try to sting a press organization? Let me point something out to you. As you hear these things in the days ahead, I want you to think about how often the press has stung people in the rest of the world. How often have you seen broadcast outlets, newspapers, online websites, and the rest, including radio, how often have you seen those press organizations attempt to sting a private business, a politician, or someone else that they suspect of being dishonest? Now, after you answer that question, think about how often some of us have suspected, especially recently, the press of being dishonest with us, of telling us things that could be, well, simply described as fake news. So, if you have somebody who has, on occasion, presented fake information to the public, does that make them an appropriate target of a possible sting by an organization like Project Veritas? And if not, why not? And if it's not okay for the press to get stung, then why is it okay for the press to sting everyone else? To your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. Let's go to Joseph in Central Point, listening on KMED. Hey, Joseph, welcome to the program. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving with your family.
I did, sir. I wanted to just give you a hearty thank you for the comments you made on my father's generation Thursday.
Oh, the ones now I have to give full credit. That was Victor Davis Hanson. He wrote a brilliant essay, and I wanted to make sure when I read somebody else's essay, I always want people to know it was not my. I wish I could claim to have written half that well, but Victor Davis Hanson is a good friend, and I told him I'm going to use your essay on the air, and I'm glad I did, but I'm also glad that I thanked the guy who actually wrote it, and that I make it clear to you that I didn't write it; he wrote it.
Well, you did a good job on relating his message in a section of his book. to my father generation. I really appreciate it, and I thank you a thousand times over for it.
Hey, it is my pleasure. And by the way, Joseph, over the Thanksgiving holiday, I got a lot of people writing to me both by Facebook and email, and I was happy to send them the links. I also put them up, I think, the link to VDH's piece, Victor Davis Hanson. He's a professor both at Stanford and the Hoover Institution and elsewhere. The links are up at LarsLarson.com and also at the website or the Facebook page, The Lars Larson Show. And of course, you can find the guy is just he's drop dead brilliant. But for anybody who didn't read it, the essence of it was that where you had a generation like your father's generation and my father's generation who believed that you went out and you didn't stop until you had won the battle or the effort that you were involved in. That the current generation and perhaps the generations that are following after us don't seem nearly as determined to tackle the big challenges that are before us. And he's more than a little bit, I guess, disturbed by the fact that we've gone from an America that would not stop until it achieved whatever it set out to, whether it was saving the rest of the world or landing a man on the moon, that we've gone from that to a very introspective, to some extent, self-centered and narcissistic kind of society that doesn't seem as concerned about making big things happen in the world.
Well, that's part of what made that generation great, is that when they won a war, a very decisive war, a decisive victory, they came back here not looking for self-glory or self-recognition, and they put their heart and soul into building the finest, most powerful and prosperous generation, a nation this world's ever seen.
That's very well put, Joseph. Thank you very much, and thanks to both your father's generation and my father's generation. We'll be back in just a moment. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here, live on the Radio Northwest Network at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. Hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving over the weekend, and I'm glad to take your calls now. And as I always say, naysay go to the head of the line on the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. So naysayer Mike is on the line. Mike, what's on your mind tonight or today?
Hey, Lars, you know, I've listened to you quite a bit.
Thank you.
And I agree with a lot you say. And I think the fake news thing that keeps coming up is kind of hurtful to our country as far as, you know, I'm in Portland and local news, I like Channel 12, I usually watch KPTV, and I just think, I'm a veteran, did a couple tours in Afghanistan, and the spin on the NFL is kind of on my mind.
Okay, hold on. Mike, I appreciate your service to America. I'm not sure, we start out with the fake news, and now we're on the NFL. Where are we going?
Well, I think the fake news part of it is, there's been so many different spins on the NFL and the protesting. And as a veteran, the NFL meant a lot to us when we were over there, and we get a chance once in a while to see a game, and it kind of brought us all together.
Yeah.
And the people I talk to is they're not offended by, you know, the protests going on per se. Is, you know, we fight for that right for them to have that right to protest. And I think the news has kind of spun it where it's us against them, and all veterans are not offended by that. I think most of them aren't offended by the protest. And
you don't think so?
People to have their right.
Why not?
I know so. With a lot of vet and in-service people I talk to now, they love the NFL, and it brings them together. And for it to be badgered and stuff, it's kind of hurtful because it's one of the things that brings people together, like their Kansas City Chiefs fans or their Seattle Seahawks fans or whatever. It bands people together, and it's a lot of fun. And
but
you know,
you said that veterans are not offended by the protests against the national anthem. Are you sure about
that? Most of them aren't. Most of, if they believe in the Constitution, that's their right to protest. And I think they kind of spun it out of different. You know, I don't take it personally that it's against the national anthem or the flag. I think they have a message.
Well, but here's the difference. I guess I'm trying to wrap my head around what you're saying. The fact that somebody has the right to do something does not mean that what they're doing is not offensive. And so when you say they're not offended by it because they have the right to do it, I mean, to be perfectly blunt, somebody has the right to defecate on an American flag. And yet almost anybody would be offended if they saw somebody doing that. The fact that somebody has the right to do it does not necessarily make it not offensive. And it surprises me when you say that veterans would not be offended by somebody who is doing something that is deliberately disparaging of our national anthem.
Are you a vet?
No, I'm not. I've said that before.
Then how would you know from that?
Well,
hold on,
Mike. Are you advancing the theory that only veterans know what's in the Constitution?
Well, no. I'm just saying that people keep bringing up, especially on the news, that all veterans are offended by.
I've never actually, it's actually a trick question. Anytime somebody says, do all people like vanilla ice cream? The answer would be no. Any question that starts with all is usually no, because absolutes for the most part don't exist. I mean, if you said, does gravity exist on every square inch of Earth? I'd say yes. That's one of the constants that is universal. But other than that, universal constants, you know, are just not there. But I said it surprises me to hear you say that any veteran would say, oh, that's okay if they disparage the flag or disparage the anthem. Let's go to Ted. Hey, Ted, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Larson.
Yeah.
You there? Okay, yeah, they got it wrong. It's Ed.
Oh, but Ed, no go problem. Ahead. Sorry about that.
Hey, so my one of my great-great uncles was a Navajo code talker. And to tell you quite honestly, I'm pretty sure that the Navajo Nation kind of likes Trump. And
I think so,
normally
too.
Normally they've been Democrat in the past.
Yeah.
But this last president, man, they just got a bad taste in their mouth with some of the stuff that he did. So I think the media is just, they're kind of goofy about some of the stuff that they mentioned.
Well, and do you think, I was just watching some of the ceremony from today. I got the impression that when Donald Trump made the reference to Pocahontas and then said, but you folks have really been around here a long time, that the two Native American code talkers who were there on the stage with him laughed about it, that they thought it was funny.
Oh, yeah. They know what matters. They've given a lot for their country, and I'll tell you about it. It's a rough way of life out there, and I see all this stuff that goes on around the United States today about all these cities that are helping out people that are having a hard time. And,
yeah.
You know, they don't want to get a job or nothing like that, but, you know, that's another subject. But, you know, I just think the media just, man, they sure know how to put a spin on stuff.
Well, tell me this, Ted. You never heard me come on the radio and claim to be a Native American, have you?
You know what? I don't think that I have.
No, I never have. And I can say that absolutely, unlike all these senators and representatives who can't say whether or not they've had a, you know, their hand on somebody's backside at various times or whatever. What do people who are Native Americans think of somebody like Elizabeth Warren, who claimed to be an Indian when in fact she was not?
Yeah, she's part of that other party, right?
Well, I'm just asking, what if a Republican
they get away with stuff all the time?
Do you think the tribe should call them out on that?
Well, I guess they probably should, but I think that they're more worried about more important things like, you know, clean water and not having their water supply poisoned.
You know what?
You know what happened.
I know. They actually pay attention to the real things. Ed, thank you very much. Let's go to Joe in Lakewood. Joe, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
What's going on, Lars, my hero? I'm calling about that vet that just called in.
Yeah.
I did 20 years in the Army. And I concur with him in the fact that we all serve to protect the right to protest. Where he is misguided and misinformed is even in the uniformed services. You cannot protest when you're on the clock, when you're in uniform. Them football players need to keep it off the field and take up this cause outside the clock. Now, when they on TV, yeah, I take disrespect to it. And if any veteran out there that says, oh, well, we're doing it for the right of their right to protest, well, they need to remember the regulations they lived under. You cannot protest when you're in uniform. Them football players are employees. They're in uniform. It is in their bylaws, and it is a crock, and anybody that buys into it, I love watching the NFL. I ain't watched a game this year, and I'll go to my grave not watching one until they get it right.
That's a good way to do about it. And Joe, thank you very much for your service in uniform, and I can't thank you enough for that comment. They're in uniform. They're on the clock. Save your private messages for your private time off the clock, off the field, out of uniform. I think that's perfectly appropriate. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And there's a little story out there that's been percolating, and I don't think it's really going to come to a full boil until about the first of the year. But for decades now, our political masters here in the Northwest have said, we have to recycle. And I never really had an objection to recycling, you know, pop cans and tin cans and plastic bottles and cardboard. It's all for the cause. I understand that. Here's the problem with it. Apparently, the Chinese who've been buying a lot of the recycled plastic and the recycled paper have notified the Northwest, you know, and the Northwest Company. So this isn't just one company. Some of it is private nonprofit organizations and others. But the Salem Statesman Journal reports, why would environmentally friendly Northwesterners be told to put recyclable plastic in the trash? Because there's nowhere else to go. Across the region, reports the Salem Statesman, recyclers are facing the consequences of new restrictions on selling recovered paper and plastic to China. Earlier this year, the biggest buyer of those recyclables in China said they don't want our paper and plastic anymore because it's too dirty. Now, some of this is just mixing garbage in with paper, and the paper recyclers and the plastic recyclers say it costs too much for us to separate it out. The official cutoff date for 24 different types of materials is January 1. Do you know what's going to happen then? The systems that a lot of us as consumers have had to pay literally millions of dollars for, so that one truck comes by your house and picks up the garbage. Then another truck comes by your house and picks up the plastic and the paper and the tin cans and the other recyclables that you have carefully put out into bins, where they have paid lots of money for all the bins, for the separate trucks, for the separate routes, for the separate collection schedules and everything else. And you know, if there's not going to be a buyer for all that recycled material, do you know where it's going to go? It's going to go to the landfill. There is no other place for it to go. I mean, after all, most of the operations that do any kind of recycling at all, where they've been stockpiling the plastic and then they either put it in giant bales and then load it onto ships and then ship it to China, where it then gets recycled, they don't have that much backup storage space. In other words, the minute Seattle, Portland, Tacoma, Spokane, Eugene, Medford, Bend, all these places, Tri-Cities, the minute all those hundreds of millions of tons of recycled material starts to back up, they're going to have to send it somewhere else. And the somewhere else is likely the landfill, which means all those carefully crafted schemes to separate out garbage from recyclables are going to be one big stream of garbage going right to the landfill. Because the stuff is too dirty. And the Chinese have finally said, we're not taking the dirty paper and the dirty plastic anymore. You're going to have to figure out something to do with it yourselves. And that is going to be an interesting situation when it arrives. Let's go to Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind on this beautiful Monday?
Beautiful Monday it is, Lars. Thanks for having me on the line. I'm a veteran. You had a call a few calls ago that had said, thank you very, very much, appreciate it, that said most veterans do not feel disrespected by those NFL players that feel like they need to kneel to protest. And I think his comment is misguided, because I would, in fact, reverse that and say majority of veterans are disrespected by it, or feel some type of disrespect by it, and that they feel that what they've done and that type of protest isn't a valid form of protest. And so I think the reverse is true. The majority believe that there is some type of disrespect, and there's a very small minority, him obviously being one of them, that do feel that it's not disrespectful. And for racial injustice to African Americans and racial justice in the United States. And I said, okay, that's fine. And I said, who do you believe in the last 7 years has been the champion of racial justice, someone that you would look up to as when you kneel? And they say, well, that's Martin Luther King, of course. And I say, okay, how many of you have seen a speech by Martin Luther King? Not very many hands went up. I was like, okay, go look at a couple speeches and go look at what's hanging behind Martin Luther King at each one of those speeches. You're going to see an American flag.
Yep.
And in fact, when you go and look at Martin Luther King marching down the streets of Chicago, what was he carrying and his fellow followers that surrounded him carrying? They were all carrying American flags. So I made this point. I was like, there's so many, infinitely many more reasons to stand and honor the flag than there are to kneel for it. So instead, why not stand and give thanks to Martin Luther King Jr. while the national anthem is played? Because not only are you giving thanks to him, but you're giving thanks to the founding fathers, and you can make that broad. There are pivotal people in this in the birth of this nation that have gotten to us where we are today. That's our founding fathers, and Martin Luther King, you can throw him in there because, yeah, blacks don't have to be forced to go sit in the back of a bus or a truck anymore. They have so many more freedoms than they are today because of him. So why not stand and give thanks to Martin Luther King Jr. instead of kneeling and flipping him the bird?
And by the way, he viewed the Constitution, the best part of that "I Have a Dream" speech, that everybody knows the two or three lines from the "I Have a Dream" speech. But I've watched the whole thing. And he made a very good point in there that doesn't often get communicated on MLK Day, and that is the Constitution is a contract with the American people. And that's something that you can appreciate. It doesn't matter what color you are. The contract that is the Constitution is a contract between the government and the people about how the government will treat the people and the rights that will be protected. Our individual rights of individual citizens, not collective rights of groups. And King had all of that exactly right. And he said, all we're looking for is that contract to be enforced, and we're here to cash that check. And he didn't mean it in terms of money. He meant it in terms of, we're here to say this is what our contract says that we're entitled to, and we would like to have that contract enforced. And he was right. And even Americans, I mean, look, every single American of every single color in this country and gender in this country has a right to say to its government, you can't take away rights from me that are inalienable rights that I get from God and are supposed to be protected by this document. And you're right. If you decide to disparage the flag of the United States, it's just a symbol. But then again, the Constitution is just a piece of paper. But it's a very important piece of paper because it stands for an idea that is somewhat unique on planet Earth. You know, you can, even if you go to the most civilized, pleasant places on Earth, you know, Great Britain is a relatively civilized place. France, Germany, Switzerland, Norway, Sweden, where my ancestors came from. You can't find a country that guarantees as broad a range of freedoms to its individual citizens as the United States does. And then if you go to the less pleasant places on Earth, China, Venezuela, Cuba, Yemen, Sudan, etc., you aren't going to find anything like it at all. But even in the best places on Earth, you don't find rights like you find in the United States Constitution. So when somebody who's an NFL player decides to sit down or take a knee while the anthem is being played for the flag that represents the country that has the broadest grant of liberty to its individual citizens of any country on Earth, nobody even comes close. Even the British, you know, who are very close to America, the British do not grant to their individual citizens the kind of liberties that Americans have routinely on a daily basis. And Jeremy, thanks very much for the call. Back in just a moment, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I get interesting emails like this when Peyton Jameson writes in, Lars, a big fan. We agree on almost everything. I listen to your show every night. I debate with a lot of people through Instagram, and I see a lot of people saying that all the success in the market is not due to Trump, but to Obama, since his policies are still in effect. I can also see a lot of people saying how amazing Obama's job creation was and things like that. Could you give me your take on this stuff? I'm just looking for a little advice on how to respond to them. If you have the time to share with me the three worst things Obama did for this country, thank you. Love the show. Keep up the good work. Well, here are the three worst things. Obamacare, taxes, and regulation. Those are the things that he did to this country that now have to be undone by finally a great president who can make America great again. Now to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let me go to Nick. Nick, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, good afternoon, Lars. As a retired Navy chief, I do not agree with your caller about three calls back. And I'm in contact with the active duty world still, and there's a lot of guys that basically said, I'm not going to watch anymore.
Yep.
And for
NFL,
him to say
NFL
that,
union, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I wish that the president would take it up a notch, since the NFL likes to use our services all the time by performing military flyovers or bringing a bunch of our service members to the game to hold the big flag that covers the whole field. Can you imagine how the NFL would freak out, would say, well, this year's Super Bowl, guess what? We're not going to do a military flyover for one of your games.
That would have that would leave a mark, for sure.
And because the NFL, that's how they promote ratings, is that, you know, it's all about the United States, and they all like to jump on the bandwagon saying that we're for the military, but when they have players, not all of them, the guys that are vets, you know, basically shun their fellow teammates, and they go out in defiance, and they'll go out there and respect the flag. And I remember, you know, vividly, when I first went into Bagram, they have the Pat Tillman Center there at Bagram Air Base, the USO.
Yep. Yep.
And the whole place is decorated for Pat Tillman. And I can only imagine how his family feels right now with disrespect that his fellow players are showing right now.
Well, Nick, I'll tell you, I haven't been following the story as closely the last couple of weeks, I'll admit, but I know that late last week, right before Thanksgiving, there was talk that that the NFL was going to have to make a decision for the coming season, which is what I think they're aiming at. And they're saying, well, if things haven't changed, then we may have to decide just not to have the anthem played at the games at all. And that way we don't have the specter of the players sitting in the locker room while the anthem's being played, because they won't go out on the field because they, you know, they don't want to take either a position of sitting or kneeling or standing. So we'll just drop it all together. It may be that behind the scenes, and I think I'd be surprised if this wasn't going on behind the scenes, that if they make that decision and they come out and tell America, okay, next year we're just not going to play the anthem, you know, at the games, that if they do that, I think they might get a surprise from the United States government saying, fine, then we don't need to do a flyover for Super Bowl, and we're going to make it clear that the United States military is not happy with you. We all, you know, the best deals are probably being cut behind the scenes rather than being done in public. And I'm hoping that you're right, that they will send a message. If you don't want to be with the United States military, then you don't get to benefit from the United States military. And thanks for the call, by the way. David is on the line from Othello, Washington. How you doing, David?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. What's on your mind?
Several calls back, you had that naysayer that said that most of the vets don't care about what's going on with the NFL. Well, my dad, he's a 93-year-old World War II vet. I'm a vet. Spent 2 years.
Thank you.
Or two tours over off the coast of Iran during the Iranian crisis. My son, he's also a vet that spent time over there. I'm in contact with a lot of my shipmates from back in that time. None of us, not a single one of us, watch football anymore. Not one of us. We have all decided that we are going to request that they give us an apology before we ever watch football again.
And that's not unreasonable. By the way, thanks for your service. My dad was a Navy chief, and I just think that they're making a colossal error, and Trump knows it. And so it may be that he's backed off a little bit with the idea that he can let them save face, that you let somebody that's backed into a corner figure out a face-saving exit. But if they don't come up with the right exit, then it may be that they're going to simply, they're going to tell the rest of the world, the rest of the country, that they're going to continue this kind of policy into the new year. It's not going to be a pretty 2018 for the NFL if they do.
Well, the way I think that they could do this is if whoever the commissioner is at that time stands up and says, you know what, we made a bad mistake. We let these guys get away with this. We apologize to the country, and we will not allow this kind of behavior to continue.
I think that would be appropriate, wouldn't it? Now, do you think that the NFL has it to, in its, you know, does it have the guts to do the right thing in this case?
I doubt it. I doubt it very much. I don't even today anymore. I don't even acknowledge that there's an NFL exists.
Well, you know what's going to happen?
It, I don't talk about it or anything.
I think that their NFL commissioner, Goodell, has screwed this thing up. They should have early on shut down Colin Kaepernick and said, we're not going to allow you to use our business as a place for you to stage your protest. And you can either knock it off or not. And they should have communicated it early on to all of their employees. Just as the vet who called in earlier said, if you're in uniform and you're on the clock in the NFL, you're working for the company. You will represent the company right. And when you're all done and you walk off the field and you take off your uniform, feel free to take part in whatever protest you want to do outside of work. But while you're on that field, you're an employee of the NFL or of a team, technically, and you need to behave accordingly. And if you don't, you can get fired just like anybody else. You've got the Lars Larson Show.